Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now! More than 1,000 Harvard students walk out of their graduation in protest over 13 undergrads who were barred from graduating after they took part in a Gaza solidarity encampment on campus. We'll speak with one of the barred students and with a Harvard professor who voted with over 100 other faculty members to confer degrees on the 13 seniors. But first, on Capitol Hill, lawmakers grill the presidents of UCLA, Rutgers, and Northwestern universities about pro-Palestine protests on campus. One Northwestern professor was singled out for criticism.
Let me ask you about Stephen Thrasher. He's one of the goons in the photo behind me. He's a professor of journalism at Northwestern. He and several of your faculty members locked arms. They scuffled with police officers, blocked the police officers on your campus.
Stephen Thrasher is the chair of social justice and reporting at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. He'll join us from Chicago. And as the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt remains closed following Israel's takeover earlier this month, we'll be joined by one of Egypt's leading human rights advocates, Hossein Bakkat. He is in the U.S. after Egypt finally lifted an eight-year travel ban on him. All that and more coming up. Now, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In central Gaza, generators at Al-Aqsa Hospital and Deir al-Balah have reportedly gone out, as the hospital warns there's no fuel left to power generators, and without electricity, quote, all patients will be condemned to death, unquote. On Thursday, Al-Aqsa Hospital treated dozens of Palestinians injured in an Israeli shelling on a welfare ministry site. 12 people were killed in that attack.
Most of the bodies were burnt. More than 30 wounded arrived at this hospital. This hospital in a few hours will not be functioning because of the lack of fuel for the generator. Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital is the only one hospital that is functioning in central Gaza.
In the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, the last two hospitals still treating patients remain under a days-long Israeli siege. This comes as the Israeli military says the bodies of three hostages were recovered in the refugee camp. They're believed to have been killed in the October 7th attack, then brought into Gaza. In the south, Israeli ground forces continue to advance in Rafah, which has now been decimated despite once being designated as a safe area. The UN warns over 900,000 Gazans, nearly half the population, has been forcibly displaced in the past few weeks and do not have access to shelter, food, water, and other essentials. In diplomatic news, the Agence France-Presse reports CIA chief William Burns is headed to Paris in hopes of reviving ceasefire talks. Meanwhile, the International Court of Justice is expected to rule shortly on South Africa's request to order a halt to Israel's assault on Rafah. A House panel held another hearing Thursday on student Palestinian solidarity protests with the heads of Northwestern University, Rutgers, and the University of California, Los Angeles. While Republican lawmakers again sought to amplify alleged anti-Semitism on campuses, Minnesota Congressmember Ilhan Omar questioned UCLA Chancellor Jean Block on failing to protect his students when a violent pro-Israeli mob, many of them outsiders, attacked peaceful protesters.
Because of your inaction, they acted on the intention and brutally attacked students you were responsible for. This happened in front of your eyes, on your campus, and it was live streamed for the whole world to see. So I would like to know if you are truly committed to keeping your students safe, How did you fail these students at many critical points where you could have intervened?
Thank you for the question, but I'm sorry, but I reject the premise. These students.
How do you reject the premise? Are these pictures lying? Are these pictures? Are any of these people in jail?
The mob attacked the pro-Palestinian students at the encampment with metal bars and 2x4s. We'll have more on this hearing after headlines with Northwestern professor Steve Thrasher. As the hearing was unfolding in Capitol Hill, police and riot stormed UCLA's campus just after hundreds of students set up another encampment and took over a campus building. Meanwhile, in Massachusetts, over 1,000 Harvard graduates walked out of their commencement ceremony Thursday. Many chanted, "Let them walk," in reference to the 13 students not allowed to graduate in retaliation for their involvement with campus protests. Speakers at the ceremony also addressed the issue.
While these students may not leave with the degrees they rightfully earned, they will walk out of Harvard's gates with something far more important, a clear conscience and a proof of resolute commitment to humanity. Take courage from their steadfastness and honor their sacrifice by using your degree to speak out for the oppressed.
In international news, German police detained at least 130 people after raiding peaceful pro-Palestine occupation at Humboldt University in Berlin. Students are calling on the university to, quote, take an active role in ending the genocide against the people of Palestine and their decades-long suffering, unquote. President Biden said he'll designate Kenya as a non-NATO ally. As President William Ruto visited the White House Thursday, the largely symbolic title was announced as Kenya prepares to deploy its forces to Haiti as part of an international security mission. The U.S. has pledged to contribute money, logistical support, and equipment. Biden justified the U.S. involvement in Haiti during a joint press conference with Kenyan President Ruto.
Haiti is in a area of the Caribbean that is very volatile. There's a lot going on in this hemisphere, and we're in a situation where we want to do all we can without us looking like America once again is stepping over and deciding this is what must be done.
Meanwhile, in Kenya, police are violently cracking down on environmental activists in the village of Ayumbo as they protest the construction of a nuclear reactor. At least 3 people were arrested on Tuesday. Last night, President Biden held a state dinner for Kenyan President Ruto. Among those who attended were 2 past presidents, Bill Clinton and President Obama, whose father was Kenyan. In Papua New Guinea, over 100 people are feared dead after a catastrophic landslide in the northern Enga province. Homes were flattened by rocks, soil, and trees after the side of a mountain collapsed. The search for survivors continues. The United Nations has approved a resolution declaring July 11th an International Day of Remembrance for the 1995 Srebrenica genocide. Some 8,000 Bosnian Muslim men and boys were killed in the massacre after Bosnian Serb armed forces stormed the UN safe zone during the Balkan Wars, seen as the worst atrocity in Europe's history since World War II. The resolution was sponsored by Germany and Rwanda. Both Serbia and Bosnian Serbs have denied that genocide happened in Srebrenica. The resolution does say Serbs are responsible for the massacre. French President Emmanuel Macron described the recent upheaval in New Caledonia as a, quote, unprecedented insurrection movement as he visited the archipelago on Thursday. Macron said he would delay new reforms that would give voting rights to French residents of the territory, a move that the indigenous Kanak population argues will dilute their voice and their struggle for independence. This is French President Macron.
Deuxièmement, dès que les retraits seront effectifs et observés.
This reform, although it's rejected by some here, which has fed the violence, it has democratic legitimacy. The bill proposed by the government has been voted with a clear majority, both in the National Assembly and the Senate. I say this as president. We don't just throw away popular sovereignty like a mere piece of paper.
Back in the United States, the Supreme Court Thursday approved a South Carolina congressional map that a lower court previously ruled was racially gerrymandered and constituted a, quote, bleaching of African-American voters from a district. In a scathing dissent, Justice Elena Kagan wrote the decision will give state lawmakers, quote, an incentive to use race as a proxy to achieve partisan ends, she said. In abortion news, Louisiana's Republican-led legislature voted to classify abortion pills as controlled substances. Republican Governor Jeff Landry is expected to sign the measure into law, meaning the possession of abortion pills without a prescription could soon be a crime in Louisiana, with penalties including jail time and fines. Mifepristone and misoprostol have been deemed safe by the FDA and do not lead to abuse or dependency, they have found. The drugs are also used for purposes other than abortion, which is already widely banned in Louisiana. This is Tyler Barberin with the Louisiana Abortion Fund.
It's going to mean detrimental things, and there are going to be very specific types of people that are circumstanced into carrying pregnancies that they don't consent to or did not want because of legislation like that, like this. And that, unfortunately, will most likely be poor Black communities that we represent and that we do our work to support.
In related news, nearly 6,000 doctors have signed a letter urging the Supreme Court to uphold the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. The federal law protects the rights of pregnant people to get the emergency medical care they need. The National Collegiate Athletic Association and the five most powerful athletic conferences agreed to an historic $2.8 billion settlement, paving the way for college athletes to be directly compensated for the first time ever. The deal, which must still be approved by a judge, would provide back pay to athletes as well as allow colleges to pay their players up to $20 million per student going forward. Critics say the deal is flawed and risks creating gender-based pay inequalities and will disadvantage smaller conferences. The Justice Department, 29 states, and District of Columbia sued Ticketmaster and its owner Live Nation for exercising a monopoly over the live entertainment ticket prices and crushing competition. The lawsuit is calling for Live Nation, which controls around 80% of major concert venues, to be broken up. Norfolk Southern will pay the government a $15 million fine for last year's derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, which caused a massive explosion and the release of toxic chemicals. Norfolk Southern also agreed to spend $500 million to complete safety improvements and address health concerns in the affected communities. Last month, the company settled a $600 million class action settlement with East Palestine residents. EPA Administrator Michael Regan said the fine's the largest permitted under the Clean Water Act, but residents blasted it as a slap on the wrist. And Texas Congressmember Sheila Jackson Lee reintroduced the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act Thursday, 2 days ahead of the fourth anniversary of the police murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Despite the national uprising that followed George Floyd's killing, Congress has failed to pass the legislation named in Floyd's memory, which seeks to reduce racial profiling and the use of force by law enforcement. At least 1,247 people were killed by police last year, more than any previous year on record. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The presidents of UCLA, Northwestern, and Rutgers universities were grilled by lawmakers on Capitol Hill Thursday about pro-Palestine protests on campus. The hearing marked the fourth time in 6 months that the Republican-led House Committee on Education and the Workforce summoned school leaders to Washington for questioning about alleged anti-Semitism. During the hearing, lawmakers reserved their heaviest questioning for the presidents of Northwestern and Rutgers, the two universities where Gaza Solidarity encampments were voluntarily dismantled after protesting students negotiated deals with university administrators. At UCLA, police violently raided the pro-Palestine encampment with flash grenades, rubber bullets, and tear gas a day after pro-Israel counter-protesters attacked the encampment with fireworks and metal rods. Dozens were arrested. Thursday's hearing marked the first time the heads of public universities, UCLA and Rutgers, were brought to testify before Congress on the issue. Our next guest, Stephen Thrasher, is a professor of journalism at Northwestern University, an outspoken supporter of the Gaza solidarity encampments at Northwestern and other schools. In fact, Thrasher was singled out during Thursday's hearing by Republican Congressmember Jim Banks of Indiana as he was grilling Northwestern President Michael Schill.
Let me ask you about Stephen Thrasher, who's one of the goons in the photo behind me. He's a professor of journalism at Northwestern. He and several of your faculty members locked arms. They scuffled with police officers, blocked the police officers on your campus from doing their job. Do they continue to teach students at Northwestern University after this embarrassing incident?
So I will not comment on individual faculty members
matters. Is it your decision and your decision alone to allow those professors to continue to teach students on your campus?
We believe in due process at Northwestern University.
You believe in due process except for the decision that you made about Coach Fitzgerald.
We followed the contract.
Have your cake and eat
process.
It too.
We had an investigation, but I'm not going to go on and on about that.
Is it okay for faculty members at Northwestern University to scuffle with police officers, to lock arms and prevent police officers from doing their job? You said in your opening statements that this encampment was responsible for anti-Semitic behavior that made Jewish students feel unsafe to go to class. Is it okay for faculty members? Do they get away with that at Northwestern University?
I am not going to comment on ongoing investigations and faculty personnel matters. There is a rule at the university that is confidential.
That those faculty members would continue to have a job. Thrasher, by the way, is something of a professional prognosticator. In fact, he went to Columbia University to participate in their encampment, and you pay his bills. You're responsible for Stephen Thrasher's activities, which is really, really crazy.
That was Republican Congressmember Jim Banks of Indiana questioning Northwestern President Michael Schill about Professor Stephen Thrasher. Well, Professor Thrasher joins us now from Chicago. He's the chair of social justice and reporting at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. He's also a columnist at Literary Hub and the author of The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. His latest column for Literary Hub is headlined, "You Are Being Lied To About Gaza Solidarity Camps by University Presidents, Mainstream Media, and Politicians." Professor Thrasher, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you respond to the questioning, and you particularly being singled out in this congressional hearing?
Well, as a journalist, I'm not used to being the subject of the story. It was quite a terrifying experience. I don't think that I'm a goon, and I'm certainly not a prognosticator, which I think means somebody who can tell the future. But the point of all of this is something that I don't take personally. I teach, actually, a video that you made, Amy, in most of my classes about manufacturing consent. And that's what all of this is about. It's supposed to scare everybody who supports Gaza. It's supposed to scare everybody who's against the genocide. It's supposed to scare students who are righteously standing up against the killing that's happening. And it's supposed to scare faculty into not supporting our students, not protecting our students, not meeting our first responsibility, which is to make sure that they are safe, and our other responsibilities, which is to make sure that they have learning opportunities. And what happened on these in many of these encampments, I've had the opportunity to visit five of them. I was not a participant in the one at Columbia. I went there as a reporter for the piece that I wrote for Literary Hub and for ongoing research that I'm doing about protests in America. But one of the really amazing things about these spaces I've seen is they are dynamic learning. They are dynamic learning and pedagogical spaces. It's really beautiful seeing students experimenting with creating a different kind of society, not just accepting what they're being handed in America. And something that I've heard at multiple different encampments, thinking about what a free Palestine would look like. And one of those things that they are experimenting with is understanding that a free Palestine, like a free New York City or a free Chicago or a free Evanston, would be a place where people who are Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Native American, or of any faith or no faith would have equal rights, would have equal responsibilities, and would live in peace and prosperity under the law, but where they would still hold on to their cultures and teach one another about them. And that's been a really beautiful thing to see in the different camps.
Professor Thrasher, you're wearing a keffiyeh right now. What does that mean to you?
To me, it makes me think of how I've been talking about this issue for 5 years. I feel a bit like I'm in Groundhog Day because I talked about this issue at my graduation speech at NYU literally 5 years ago on Sunday, and then had a very difficult media week afterwards, and of having a very, very intense media week again this time. But it really makes me think of a dear friend of mine whose name is Mohanad. In 2019, when I was going through it for speaking about this issue, for defending Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voices for Peace on my campus as a graduating student in NYU, which, of course, is an issue now on hundreds of campuses around the country, a young man in Gaza named Mohanad wrote to me and told me how much he supported me and told me that the people in Gaza were sharing my speech and were really appreciative of somebody at American University talking about it. And that's a message I've seen happen at all these encampments, that people in Gaza are telling them what it means for them, for students to stand up for them. And so Mohan and I have been pen pals for these years. I was relieved to know that he had gotten married to a Palestinian-Canadian partner, had moved to Canada. And so I was relieved to know that he was not going to be in danger when I heard everything that was happening in Gaza this fall. But he has suffered tremendous loss. Both his mother and his father were killed by snipers. Many people in his family have been killed. I also have Palestinian cousins through marriage to my aunt, and they have many relatives in the area that are in danger. And so I wear this keffiyeh to remind myself that this is not an abstract talk about free speech. This is a matter of life and death for wonderful, beautiful, artistic, political people who are losing their lives. Young people, old people, more than 140 journalists from my profession who have been murdered, more than 15,000 children who have been killed. And it's also a reminder for me that there is love and beauty in this. After the comments that came from Representative Banks yesterday, I have never felt more loved and supported from people around the world. And it's reminded me that when I see other people wearing keffiyehs, that we have a connection to one another. And it's reminded me that there is so much love and beauty and connection, even as people might face ostracization, or they might face HUAC-style bad things happening to them in Congress. There is this connection that you find with people all over the world, and we're all wanting a world that has more peace and love and justice. So that's why I wear it.
Congressmember Banks claimed you were filmed scuffling with police, and that we don't see that in the film. We see the police hitting and pushing you and kicking you. It reminded me of Professor Orlick at Dartmouth. She was the former head of the Institute for Jewish Studies there, and she, too, is body slammed to the ground. Can you talk about how the police are dealing with these protests? But also, during the congressional hearing, Northwestern President Schill defended his decision to negotiate an agreement with pro-Palestine student protesters who had set up the encampment. He was being attacked for doing that. And I'm just wondering if you can talk about what that agreement was all about.
Sure. So there's a great mischaracterization of what's happening between protesters, faculty, and police. I've been to five of these encampments. They are incredibly beautiful spaces. I find it hard to believe that ours was anti-Semitic in any way. I never heard of any complaints about that. What I did see were Jewish students, including some of mine, of whom I was very proud, leading the Passover prayers. Our encampment overlapped with Passover, three nights of it that I was there in the evening. There were sundown Passover prayers. I saw students teaching about Pesach, teaching about the foods that were being served, their connection to Judaism, and how it called for them ethically to be involved in the issue for a free Palestine. And two of the moments that were most memorable for me were singing the song Dayenu, which was one of the first Passover songs I learned when I first went to a Passover. And then they were literally passing around matzah to share with people. I received the matzah from my colleague Ricky, who is Jewish and was wearing a yarmulke. I'm a Christian. I took some of it and I passed it on to somebody in a hijab. So we were a Jew, a Christian, and a Muslim, all observing Passover together. So I think the depiction that President Schill and other people have painted of the camps is wrong in saying that they are anti-Semitic. I think the police are the element of violence. As you were talking about in the headlines at UCLA, the camp was not violent until a Zionist group came and very violently attacked them, and the police let them in a manner similar to how police used to let the KKK or other violent groups affect black people. And then the police themselves are the violent element. And it's not coincidental, including myself, that so many of the people you see being arrested are black, queer, people of color, often untenured, many who are migrants or are here on visas, who are the most vulnerable people on campus, but who still feel it's a calling for them to protect their students. At Northwestern, fortunately, the encampment ended without police violence, but it began with police violence. I was on faculty support on the first morning when the students asked for faculty to be there to help them, and I didn't think the police would move in so quickly, but within just a few minutes, they did. So my colleagues and I formed a faculty defense line, and I feel it's really important as the Daniel Runberg Chair of Social Justice and Reporting, as someone who's teaching a class right now called The Theater of Protest, and someone who teaches a lot about Martin Luther King and AIDS activists and groups like ACT UP, I knew that it was my responsibility to stand there and try to protect them, especially since we'd seen such horrific violence the day before at the Universities of Texas and UCLA. And as you can see in the video, we are not hitting the police. We're not scuffling with them. We just hold on to each other. We take the blows. We're hoping that we could take the blows so the students don't take the blows. And we were successful. The police retreated. You can see in one of the videos, it's I think the police chief of the Evanston Police Department pulls them back. And so we were able to create a safe space so that the students could express themselves. The encampment went on for 5 days. I was not involved in any way in the negotiation for the ending. President Schill and other faculty and students came to an agreement that allows for a number of things, including questions about what the investments are at Northwestern University, and as he was questioned about extensively in front of Congress about bringing Palestinian students and faculty to campus under very similar programs that exist to bring faculty and students from other war-torn places around the world. So there shouldn't be much controversy about that. President Schill and I don't agree on a lot about the politics of Israel and Palestine. I do think that I did appreciate the way that he said that he would not talk about individual students and faculty and that we should, you know, be allowed to have due process. We've seen horrific cases where people don't get due process, including Mohamed Abdu at Columbia, who is very unceremoniously ended his employment was ended by the president of university, Manoush Shafiq, of Columbia University. But I do disagree with President Schill that these places were horrific places of anti-Semitism. I can only imagine for him as a Jewish person that it felt absurd to be being called an anti-Semite in front of Congress. And I think that it's also absurd to call our many Jewish students who are working in coalition with other students anti-Semites just because they believe in a free Palestine.
Yes, and the president of Northwestern, the descendant of Holocaust survivors. Well, Stephen Thrasher, the way journalism works, and you know how it works as a professor of journalism, perhaps what got the most attention this week was that picture of you that went viral. What is Violet Affleck trying to tell us? Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck's daughter was photographed with some pointed reading material. She is holding your book, The Viral Underclass. I thank you so much yes, Stephen.
I've known about what was coming on Capitol Hill for about 10 days, so that was a very nice diversion. I found out that Violet Affleck is quite beloved in the disability community because she's largely known as the only person in Hollywood who still masks at events. She also went out in a Free Palestine t-shirt a few weeks ago, and so I was just really touched that that she shared my book, and if I was going to be in the news around stuff happening in Washington, I was glad that people in Hollywood were also talking about my book. But I really, really appreciated the opportunity to just see somebody in a position of visual authority reminding people to keep masking in dense places and to keep taking COVID precautions because in part of my life, I'm a public health person and COVID is not over. And we still need to, just as we do with our call for a free Palestine, we need to take care of one another, love one another, and show community care for one another.
Stephen Thrasher, Daniel Renberg Chair of Social Justice and Reporting at the Bedell School of Journalism at Northwestern University, a columnist with Literary Hub, will link to your most recent piece, his latest book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. Coming up, we go to Harvard. More than 1,000 Harvard students walked out of their graduation in protest of 13 undergrads barred from graduating, taking part in a Gaza solidarity encampment. Stay with us. Step by step, all a happy